It would be a dream come true for environmentalists if the logging of old-growth timber would stop completely. Ancient trees would just be left alone. Society's wood needs would come from timber harvested from lands already cut over, generally from smaller trees. One national forest is the focus of a study that shows old-growth logging can be phased out. That's already the intention of several players, including the Forest Service. But the study shows the phase-out could happen even sooner than the Forest Service estimates. The Tongass National Forest in Alaska is the focus. Geos Institute and the Natural Resources Defense Council are the major players. Geos Institute is based in Ashland. Its president and chief scientist are one and the same. Dominic Della Sala here in the studio with us once again. Dominic, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks. Great to be here today.
In particular, this part of Alaska is a part of the world you know very well. Tell us about your history with it.
Well, back in the 1990s, I was a research ecologist on the Tongass, and I was at the time documenting the demise of old-growth forest and trying to figure out how to lessen that impact. And then I went to Washington, D.C., and at the time was working for the World Wildlife Fund, trying to change Forest Service policy so that they would recognize the incredible world-class values of the Tongass and not cut old-growth anymore. We're very close to that being a reality now.
Where is the Tongass, first of all? Let's go with the where's, and then we'll get to the why it's so significant.
Tongass is in southeast Alaska, so if you take a plane up to Seattle and transfer and then head over to Ketchikan, you're in the Tongass rainforest. It's one of the most important temperate rainforests in the world.
What makes it so important?
There are only roughly about 5 or 6 areas in the world that are still relatively intact, and the Tongass is right up there in the top tier of those forests. It has world-class fisheries. The salmon and tourism economy are really what's driving the economics of that region. And the old-growth forests are amazingly important, not only for wildlife, but they're taking carbon dioxide out of the air, storing it for long periods and helping to cleanse the air we breathe and lessening the impacts of global warming.
When you say it's intact, I mean, there are large portions of it that have just never been touched.
Yeah, it's really amazing. When you go up there, I feel like I'm in a time capsule going back to the 1800s, which, you know, you look out the window when you're flying and it looks a lot like probably what this area looked like in the 1800s. And, you know, there's still a footprint out there. There's been a lot of logging, but there's still some amazingly intact rainforests that have not been logged yet.
And are there differences in the ecosystems as a result? I mean, there are some things about the way that wildlife act in the Tongass that is a bit different from the lower 48, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. And on the Tongass, it's really interesting because it's an archipelago. There are all these islands out there. There are thousands of islands. And it's relatively isolated from the mainland. So the impacts there are more severe because you don't have wildlife that can make that migration from the inland areas over into the rainforest on those islands. And some examples are even deer. Found to decline when there's too much logging of old growth because they need that thermal habitat in the wintertime. And as they are declining, so is the Alexander Archipelago wolf, which is a subspecies of wolf that does not do well in a forest that's been clear-cut and eroded because of loss of habitat and poaching pressure.
I have to believe that just given the general scope of things in Alaska, that the Tongass is probably bigger than forests in our region. Is that a fair assumption?
The Tongass is the nation's largest national forest. It's 17 million acres. Not all of it's forest, though. Only about 6 million or roughly a third of those acres are productive old-growth forest, and about 90% of that third is still in pretty good shape. It hasn't been logged.
So compare that to forests in our region, the Rogue River Siskiyou, for example. I mean,
much smaller. Only a couple of million acres, and it's had a lot of forest impact. You know, get up in an airplane, look out the window, and you could see these little green blotches in a sea of clear cuts. And there are portions of the Tongass that look like that, but there are still areas that where the forests greatly outnumber the clear cuts.
So there is a plan already to phase out old growth logging in the Tongass National Forest, is that right?
This is the opportunity that we face. Secretary Tom Vilsack, under the Secretary of Agriculture, said in 2010 he wants to transition out of old-growth logging. And the administration is setting a process in play right now to revise the Tongass Land Management Plan to consider different alternatives for transitioning out of old-growth. Now, what they have said, the Forest Service, is that they can do this in 10 to 15 years. And we took a look at this, and we used the Forest Service data on second growth. Those are stands that have already been logged and that could be logged again. And when you actually analyze their data, they could start that transition right now, and they could be there in 2020. And so instead of 10 to 15 years of additional old growth logging, they could start that transition now. And they can also see a slight increase in the number of jobs as a result of increasing volume coming out of the second growth compared to old growth, which is going to get pretty much appealed every time an old growth sale gets put up for bid.
We're talking to Dominic Della Sala, President and Chief Scientist of the Geos Institute, about phasing out old-growth logging in the Tongass National Forest in Alaska and what applicability this might have to other national forests around the country. Join us on The Exchange with your questions and comments at 800-838-3760 around the region. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Our email address, jx@jeffnet.org. Back to the data you're using here now. Here again, this is not you and the National Resources Defense Council coming in with your own figures. You're using the Forest Service's own figures.
We actually worked with the Forest Service to acquire the data. We went through an engineering, forestry engineering consultant that works with the timber industry, and we asked her to access the data. This is Catherine Mader out of Corvallis, and she obtained Forest Service data and also asked the Forest Service to check her numbers. The numbers are solid. We have provided the Forest Service with a bulletproof estimate of the volume of second growth that could be available to replace or offset old growth logging on the Tongass. So it's not no longer a question of when, it's a question of if the agency and the administration is willing to do this by the end of the Obama administration, and we say that they can economically do this.
So this is the big difference. I mean, we're talking in 6 years rather than 10 or 15 as the Forest Service proposes. And so what has there been a response yet to your information?
There has. We presented it at all levels of the Forest Service and the Department of Agriculture. There's interest, and there's a process in play right now to amend the forest plan on the Tongass, and we'll see if this is one of the alternatives that winds up in the management plan.
How heavily would you have to work the second growth timber, though, to be able to get the kind of cut that the timber industry wants?
Well, we estimated that. We actually asked the industry, how much do you need to have a viable industry? And so they gave us a threshold number, and we ran the calculations. We projected it out 40, 50 years into the future, and this is why we came up with the number that by 2020 they can hit that threshold and then have a sustained yield of second growth logging without touching old growth on an industrial scale.
But a sustained yield implies that there's pretty much a steady state here. There's no real peaks and valleys in the output.
That's right. They would meter it out over a certain volume that the industry claims they need to have a robust economy on in Southeast Alaska.
Let us take some calls. We have Jeff in Roseburg on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Dominic Della Sala from the Geos Institute.
Hello. I had these same thoughts for the Umpqua National Forest, where, you know, they want to close all these roads, but the roads go to areas that were cut, and those are grown up. Now we can manage those and not cut any old growth, just recut all of the areas that were cut, you know, long ago.
So work the second growth, in other words, and just stay out of the old growth areas.
Yeah, sure.
Just what we're talking about here. Thanks.
And then leave the, like I say, the roads were built to go to those places, so they don't need to spend money, destroying roads.
All right. Thanks for that, Jeff. Let's get a response from Dominic. Appreciate it.
Yeah, I think there's a definite possibility that also could be the case in other national forests. Let me give you an example. The Siuslaw National Forest in Oregon has been a national model for making that transition. They did this in the 1990s, and at the time, the forest supervisor took a bold leap of faith, and he didn't want to deal with appeals anymore and said that we need to just look at the second growth. And now today, the Siuslaw is getting about a cut of 40 million board feet a year with no appeals and no old growth. So I think we need to have serious discussion about go and no-go zones when it comes to forestry, because we know we need to have a job and forestry-related sector in our economy. And we also know the value of mature and old-growth forests is irreplaceable. I think there is a win-win here, and the Tongass is the first place to showcase this, and the Siuslaw already has done it. So why can't we do this on all the national forests in our region?
Does it get harder, though, as you head further south and you get into places where the precipitation is simply less?
It does, and it depends on how you want to meter out that sustained yield. And the problem we have in Southern Oregon is there are unrealistic expectations in terms of how much these forests can continue to provide in the way of board footage without compromising water quality, clean air, climate amelioration. So that's when we get into trouble, when we try to push these forests beyond their capacity, which is what we've done for the past 40 or 50 years down here.
This is something I've wondered about for many years from covering this as a reporter years ago, was whether part of the issue was that forests in Southern Oregon were viewed through the lens of people making decisions at the state office in Northern Oregon, where the precipitation is a lot greater and the forests grow a lot lesser.
That's true. And you can see that there are many examples of clear cuts on our hillsides that are on very steep slopes that have not come back in many, many years. There are examples of places that haven't come back in decades because we're cutting on steep slopes in climate that is not as conducive for forest regrowth, on soils that are erosive. So, I mean, those are the places that really should be no-go zones. And they were at one point mature and old-growth forests, and they won't come back in that direction because of the kind of logging that's happened on those slopes.
So as you look, for example, at what Jeff called and talked about the Umpqua National Forest, when you think about the Rogue River Siskiyou National Forest, for example, I mean, what are the possibilities that you see there for similar moves to what you're talking about for the Tongass and what is already happening, or the Tongass, and what's already happening with the Sayous Law?
You know, I would like to see the federal agencies, and it's not just the Forest Service, it's the BLM as well, move to a restoration focus. And so that means maintaining and protecting the last of the mature and old-growth forest, and then repairing the damage that's been done over the larger area from decades of unsustainable logging. I think there are jobs in that in terms of thinning overstocked tree plantations and fuel reduction in areas closest to where people live. So I think we can have both benefits.
Let's take another call. We have Ann and Eugene on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Dominic Della Sala from the Geos Institute. We're talking about old growth logging and potentially phasing it out on national forests.
I don't know why people, thank you for taking my call. I don't know why people give credit to the Sayous Law National Forest to going to a second growth cutting. I flew over the Sayous Law National Forest in 1986, and except for the wilderness areas and some very problematic, very steep areas, there wasn't any old growth left. I mean, it looked like World War III. And so, you know, giving them credit for cutting second growth, that's all they've got. Thank you.
All right, thanks for that. Appreciate it, Ann.
She has a point. And, you know, it's unfortunate that we have to get to the position where almost all our old growth is gone before we make that transition.
Well, that would make it easy to say, yeah, we're not going to log any old growth anymore because we don't have any anymore, is the way Ann looks at it.
Yeah, and, you know, the opportunity in the Tongass is different. We could make that transition now while there are significant amounts of old growth on the Tongass so that we don't have to be there in the next generation where, you know, we're having this situation that Ann just described on the Sayous Law where it's out of desperation instead of out of, you know, a vision to move in a different direction.
As somebody who knows the Tongass National Forest very well, is this exciting to you because it's about preserving the Tongass, or is it exciting to you also because of the fact that it might potentially have some applicability elsewhere?
I think it's both of those. I really see this as a win-win. And, you know, we have been really at loggerheads for way too many years over this issue. So I think the Tongass can be a model in terms of making the transition while there's still time to have an intact rainforest up there and not following the path of what we have seen throughout most of the nation, which has logged almost all of its old forest, and we're fighting over the scraps now down here in the Pacific Northwest.
I assume if we're talking about just logging second growth, that the access roads have been built to a lot of this timber over the years. And so you're not talking about necessarily building new roads.
No. And in fact, what I would hope that we do is take a look at our road system and try to come up with a more rational transportation plan that allows for access as needed and also closes some really bad roads that are failing and that are also producing sediments that are killing salmon spawning areas.
We'll continue the conversation for a few more minutes with Dominic Della Sala, President and Chief Scientist at the Geos Institute. You can join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760 anywhere, 541-552-6782 in the Rogue Valley, and by email, jx@jeffnet.org. You mentioned that this has been sent back to the Forest Service and said, you know, here you go. Is it also being rolled into the management plan? Are they still taking comments on the 10-year management plan?
The comment period ended last month, and so now we're playing a wait-and-see game in terms of whether or not the report that we have submitted will show up as an alternative. And
so it was submitted before the comment period closed?
It was, yes.
All right, so there are other things to be considered here, not just about logging, but also the uses of carbon or our forests as carbon sinks. And I mean, is it showing much promise to be able to go into that realm?
I think so. And you know, the thing about forests that are really fascinating is that they're just big sponges of carbon, and they're soaking up this carbon dioxide that we're putting up into the atmosphere that's causing global warming. And so they need to be enlisted into the solutions for climate change. And the president has taken some bold actions on reducing emissions from coal-fired power plants, but he has not acted on forests. And globally, deforestation is producing more greenhouse gases than the entire world's transportation system. And so if we cut less forest, we have more opportunities to pull carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere and store it for long periods in trees and soils and vegetation.
And what's going on with the development of markets where people are actually going to pay for those carbon credits?
It's really a fascinating thing that's happening in California, where companies looking to offset a portion of their global warming pollution can work with the private sector in helping to acquire the offset. So what happens is that a forestry industry, a private landowner, will demonstrate that they are improving their forest management, they're doing set-asides, and that difference is compensated economically by a company looking to offset and purchase those credits. So I think there's some real opportunity to get private landowners involved in conservation that's economically feasible.
Some more calls here. Here's John and Vanita. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Dominic Della Sala.
Good morning, guys.
Hi.
Jeff, thanks again for having this topic on, and here I go again.
Yeah.
My biggest point with this, I mean, I work for the Willamette Forest, and I grew up fifth generation Oregonian around logging all of it, and it breaks my heart to think of us cutting down one more virgin timber tree. Old growth can mean what you want it to mean, and I've watched people argue right by each other, not even communicating. You say virgin timber, primeval original forest, you're talking about a target. And I don't want to see another one drop. The only ones of those I'd ever want to see dropped if they're in a park and they're a threat to people. Other than that, I see absolutely no excuse at all whatsoever for cutting down a virgin timber tree anywhere in our country.
Okay, John, very clear
thanks,
on that point.
Both.
Thanks a lot for that. Let's go to Pam and Dexter. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Hi, well, I too might sound like a broken record, but it's so important to connect deforestation and climate change. And I was wondering, how feasible would it be to, instead of just not clear-cut old growth, but actually stop clear-cut logging entirely and go to sustainable selective logging, and also to help not only just stop cutting the mature old growth, but also transition a large majority of the second growth into mature old growth, because we have severely overcut. And I had read that our forests here in the Pacific Northwest are one of the top 10 forests in the world for carbon sequestration. And so I'm working with the group in Eugene that's trying to get industrial hemp grown as an alternative. There's a great product called Hempcrete, which is a building material that you can use instead of wood. So I'm really excited about, you know, talking about this issue, bringing it all home, because we can get paid for not cutting our forests. And unfortunately, our legislators are paid by the timber industry, and the last thing they want is us to transition. So what's the possibility of us actually stop clear-cut logging and go into more sustainable thinning and methods of logging?
Key
and I'll
question.
Stop radio.
All right, thanks for that, Pam.
Wow, both of those callers were fascinating. Thank you for both of those questions. And so, you know, I think it's always a possibility whether or not the industry is willing to make that leap because of the assumptions that they can't get as much yield unless they're doing clear cutting. And that seems to be the case for a good portion of the forestry practices that are across our region. So there have to be trade-offs. And I hope we head in that direction because nobody likes to see an ugly clear cut on their slopes. And, you know, the other thing that I also wanted to point out about the comment that was made about moving second growth into older forest, this is one of the key differences we have with Senator Wyden's ONC bill, that it exposes the 80 to 120-year-old forest to about a double rate of increase of logging. So we would never get mature forest coming back over time because of that logging happening in that other class.
What response are you getting to the timber from the timber industry to the plan in the Tongass?
It's been fairly positive. They are really suspect about the economics on it, so we're working next to show that it's economically feasible to move those small logs around.
Okay, this is not the last time we'll talk to you about this, I sense. Dominic Della Sala is the president and chief scientist at the Geos Institute based in Ashland, talking about the applicability of phasing out old-growth logging in the Tongass National Forest and how that might extend to other national forests as well. Dominic, thanks again.
You bet.
Short break on The Exchange, then back with Garrison Keillor. Stay tuned.